system. I find you in the shows and moving are great. And being a nerd, the sign system is everywhere you go.
Bing bong.
Was that the counter or was that the jingle? What was that?
I was hoping for our new guest that we have today, who is based in New York, that he would understand the bing bong.
You're talking about the subway doors opening, right?
No.
What time is it? Showtime. What time is it? Showtime.
That's a new one, but it's also a Knicks, popular New York Knicks meme.
I don't sports, man. I'm sorry. I don't get sports.
Welcome back to the Zion System Office Hours podcast. We have a very special guest today, a friend of the program, Donnie D'Amato. I'll give it to you to introduce yourself. That's how we do it here.
Okay, that makes it easy. Yeah. Hi, I'm Donnie D'Amato. I am a founder and chief architect of a company called Design Systems House. I also am very involved in the community in lots of different ways. Recently launched a couple of different things between DS Events, which is kind of showcasing all of the different events that are happening in our practice. Now, I think currently has about 70 events that we've had listed and plenty more. CSS Reviews, which is probably less related to design systems and more about UI engineering, which I think we'll talk about today, right? And then finally, the wireframe pop. God, I can't say that word right. The wireframe podcast, which I just launched a couple weeks ago. And just talking about, you know, design development. Trying to disambiguate stuff for people because there's a lot of information out there that's confusing, you know, and I want to try to break it down and make it easy for folks. And that's the general gist of things that I'm doing, I think. I mean, I got a lot more going on, but I don't want to go for 45 minutes. Otherwise, PG is going to, you know, blow an artery.
Donnie has the most going on of projects and initiatives running concurrently.
Very accurate. Oh, very accurate. I mean, in fact, so if you're going to let me, I'm going to continue to 45 minutes now.
Keep it. Let's go.
So I have by the next week, I know we're recording at a particular time, but the week of, I think it's, April 17th, I have a talk at Priceline it's actually a discussion that's going to be talking about, do components exist, all about component metrics and how we measure components. So, by the time this comes out, I don't know if you'll know about that because this might be too late depending on how fast Dave is with editing, but you know, maybe I saw you there already. That would be cool.
So going back in the past, this will probably come out a few weeks after this recording date,
but I'll have stuff going on then too, I'm sure. You know, I'm unstoppable.
is that your LinkedIn title, just unstoppable?
Hold on a second, I'm editing the profile right now.
Edit the slogan so it says, okay. If I search for Donnie D'Amato, it just says unstoppable.
Yeah, I'm doing it right
now. Or a top voice in the unstoppable.
Should use quotation marks.
Right. Yeah, they need to know that for sure.
So, how's everyone doing?
Feeling spicy.
Had so much coffee today, so I am ready.
PJ's wired.
I am. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, we brought Donnie on to talk about the beautiful world of. I'll say a few of the terms that I think encompass the same thing, but design technologists and design technology, and wanted to bring another professional friend over because when we brought Aisha, that PJ used to work with at Pinterest, that episode did really well, and still a lot of people chiming in and talking about that episode. So wanted to open up the conversation about design technology, especially given there's been some spicy takes on you know, design Twitter about the role of design technologists and the role of designers and code.
Cool. I mean, I don't know if this episode is going to be as good as that one because I'm on here. I'm just bringing the ratings down immediately. But yeah, man, I have been seeing these takes out there, absolutely. And actually, the most recent Wireframe episode 2, as of this recording, I got kind of triggered because there was a job posting that said front end on it and didn't actually mean front end from what I used to know front end to be. You know, back in the day, front end was the thing that Brad Frost would describe as front of the front end, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, that stuff. Now front end means actually JavaScript engineer. So, and that's like difficult to disambiguate sometimes about what the role really means. But I end up going, you know, down a rabbit hole. I speak about design engineering, design technologists, that kind of role that's sitting out there. And I'm glad that it's getting a lot of traction, because these folks that I'm speaking about, including myself, are really wizards in the space, right? And I explained that in that episode that I'll explain here too, is that imagine being able to create, or not create, but have an idea first. Just have an idea. I have a concept, the thing that I want to try to make. And then not only design the way that that would look, but actually make the thing work fully. You know, so you're actually taking, you know, you're solving the problem, not just from the design, but actually being able to put it in people's hands and say, does this work for you? And do the full gamut. And those people, these design technologists, UI engineers, UX engineers, these same people, being able to do that whole gamut is super powerful. It's wild to me that they are not like the first hires in like startups, because they're like jack of all trades kind of thing for that experience.
I think my first introduction to design engineers were, I think, at Dizzy Streaming or BAMTech back in the day when PJ and I were working together. I think we called them like UX engineers or UI engineers, and they were usually the, I think, similar to yourself, probably an expert in one specific platform, and then they may have been the only engineer on that team for some time. And I'm just thinking specifically on our like UWP, like Xbox engineer. He was the person that would be able to prototype on Xbox for us, Windows Surface tablet, and be able to really not only develop for it, but advocate for support for that platform just based on doing such work. And I love working with those folks, because I think there's certainly a design slant. I hate using this word craft, but there is a craft slant. And I think the idea of making something look more realistic. But I wanted to understand this, because we did mention the word front end. Like, where do you see the differences between what you perceive as a design technologist versus a front end engineer? And I'll take a step back and say, like, on our team at Meta, primarily my design systems team is front end engineers.
So yeah, it goes back to what I was kind of explaining or got triggered by in that job posting, because, you know, the 20 years ago that I kind of started doing what I've been doing now, the HTML, the CSS and JavaScript, there was no Node.js back then. Like, when you're doing front end, you really are just in the browser raw dogging it, right? That's really all you had in there. And that was the front end, because that was the client side. That's the thing that the user sees, and that's everything that that encompasses. And over time, that's become more complex, for better or for worse, to include things like Node and, you know, API calls and even potentially databasing, where now when people mention front end, they actually, like I mentioned, mean JavaScript engineer. And the HTML and the CSS expertise has kind of gone away in favor of React and other things that are more interesting or more programmy, or, you know, whatever that meant to be. And I think that also comes from people not understanding CSS and being afraid of it, where they think JavaScript is more, you know, logical. I think that's probably part of it as well. So front end to me now, seeing what that term is really JavaScript engineer. Meanwhile, the UX engineer or the design technologist, that's more traditionally what we used to call front end now, because that's a person that would care about the user interface, the user experience. They're closest to the user, trying to build that properly, responsively, accessibly. And they aren't as close to the Node.js side as a now JavaScript engineer or full stack engineer would be.
I would posit that some of that atrophy is due in part to design systems, because in the past, before design systems, when you couldn't just reuse a button or reuse a complex component, people had to make it. People had to understand how to integrate raw code. And now you have this this encapsulated component that you bring into the code base, and it just does the thing, and it handles the styling and the component level logic. I don't hear a lot of design system practitioners enjoying talking about the side effects that we're creating within in the industry, which I don't think is necessarily healthy. I do think design systems are playing a part in reducing the craft of front-end engineers, UX designers, what we typically called front-end, because it's just handling it for people. There are efficiency gains to be had in that. Obviously, we tout that all the time, but there are downsides as well, which means you can hire engineers that don't necessarily understand the nuances of CSS and get relatively the same output at the end of the day. Not as high a quality, most likely, but quote, I'm air quoting, good enough. And I don't know what to make of that, to be honest with you. Clearly, I like design systems. I'm on a design system podcast, but to say it's not having, it's all positive, everything's great, nothing's bad, I don't know.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, agree wholeheartedly on a lot of those takes. I mean, you're right about the purpose of the design system trying to make it easier for the organization, right? Like, there should be components, there should be tools, resources, all that stuff should be available in the perfect design system, which we're all striving for, that make it so that the entire organization can build quickly, accessibly, et cetera. But you certainly need someone who's an expert that distributes that stuff. And I think that's why when we talk about design engineering and the related roles, it is a part of design systems. It's usually that role that sits very closely, if not inside of it, that you need that person that has expertise in user interface engineering, for sure.
I think that's why a lot of that skill set is centralizing in design systems, because typically that's the space where it happens, and then it propagates to the rest of the teams. Is that a good thing? I don't know. Pros and cons.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about what Brad Frost is kind of talking about most recently, which is that global design language, you have to think about what does that mean for the work that we do locally in our teams, right? If there's a global design language that's out there that everyone's using, then what does our role really mean? And actually, I have a blog post called The End, which I mentioned that, like, you know, what does that mean? Where if there's already a system in place, like, what are we all doing? What is the next role for us? And in fact, I even mentioned there's that Rabbit R1 that's coming out, which has that idea of like the large action model, which is meant to like combine user interfaces together in order to, you know, achieve your goal without a user actually looking at the interfaces. Well, if the user has no interfaces any longer, I mean, do we even need systems anymore? So it's a really interesting question that comes up through that engineering that might happen. And granted, we're a long way away from that happening, certainly. But, you know, it's something interesting to think about in terms of the line of work that we do.
Davey, what's your take on global design systems?
I have a different lens. So, and I'll speak of I think the lens hasn't changed since I've been working at these like mega corps. Like, I just happened to be working on the more, I would say I was on the Jedi Megacorp before, and now I'm on the non-Jedi Megacorp. And I would say it's very hard on a large scale, like in a mega corporation like Meta, to take some like best practice information that sits outside and adopt it one for one. And for better or for worse, it's either like we have our own distinct needs. It, for better or for worse, it might be ego. You know, truthfully, it's very difficult for us to sometimes peek out and see what others are doing. And that's like a very big pet peeve of mine. Like, we're very insular. We recorded a podcast about this, like just being stuck on like insular thinking. I think it from like a design language point of view, I think setting standards is great. And I think being able to work in one place and then hop to another place and have extreme similarities, I think that's wonderful. But in our megacorps where we come up with acronyms that will never make sense outside of here, and terminology that never makes sense. It's very difficult for me to see us adopting something like that, even though like there's a lot of excitement around it.
It's kind of deviating from the UX engineer, the design technologist. This is another subject for another day, but I do think that there's a layers upon layers of human psychology, which are going to be very difficult for a global design system to take place, in my opinion, but we shall see. I've been wrong about stuff all the time. Who the hell knows?
In terms of like the design technologist role, Donnie, like how have you seen it able to up level like designers that work in design systems and design system deliverables?
Yeah, I think the thing that people automatically recognize is that bridge between design and engineering, being able to communicate between design and engineering so that, you know, if there's an intention that the designer is meaning to convey to the engineer but isn't able to speak the language, so to speak, they can translate it, that intention, to the engineer and say, well, this is what they really are trying to get out of this approach, right? Meanwhile, on the reverse side, you can have some feedback before it hits engineering from that that design technologist that says, I don't think this is going to work because of this performance reason, this accessibility reason, et cetera. And again, that's in a communication that's not directly with that engineer that, again, is going to speak in engineering terms. That makes it very difficult for the designer to wrap their head around. So that's a huge part of that design engineer being in an ecosystem, to be able to communicate between these people on a regular basis.
Where do you think a design engineer should exist in a corporate org chart?
Oh my God, PJ, did you read my blog? Are you firing me up?
I'm just asking.
Okay. Just asking. Okay. All right. Lay me up. So I have a blog post. It's called UX Engineer, A Terminal Career. And I had many design engineers and the like respond to that very, I'll say positively. What I'm talking about in that blog post is really not all that positive. What it's talking about is it's explaining, you know, design engineering or UX engineering as a whole from my lens. But one of the parts that I call out in there pretty heavily is the career ladder being an absolute disaster. And I'll explain a little bit why that is here. And that's because no organization knows where to put us. And once they do put us somewhere, it's either in the design org or the engineering org. And they look at us and they go, well, you know, if you're in a design org, they'll say, you're not doing all the things a designer would do. So like you need to do more stuff in order for you to be promoted, right? Or same thing on the engineering side. You're not engineer-y enough, so you won't be promoted there either. And you kind of get stuck. And it's only these larger corporations, the Googles, the Microsofts, that have a real UX engineering track, do you see any sort of growth in there. So it's unfortunate for folks like us that, you know, go into a company, you kind of have to expect that you're not going to grow because they don't know how to grow you, you know, from the levels and whatnot. So that's the unfortunate thing. Like when I went to where I work now at GoDaddy, I came in as an engineer. So I have to like walk like an engineer and talk like an engineer and all that kind of stuff in order for me to be promoted. But meanwhile, I have a great deal of experience when it comes to user experience. You know, I teach at Parsons School of Design here in New York. I've been doing that for 4 years. So I could speak on behalf of design very well. Meanwhile, I'll also sit in these engineering all hands, you know, with my eyes glazed over because all they're doing is talking about AWS and Kubernetes. And I'm like, I don't care about any of that shit. It's not me. You know, so it's a challenge to find your place in the org.
Reason number 37,158 why we can't have nice things. That is, I think that's a pretty common sentiment and why I stopped. I mean, I still do it, but I'm firmly in the design track.
PG, I saw your code. I saw your code on Twitter.
I said I'm a designer. Okay.
Look.
Don't judge me. Don't judge me.
No. I want to give you some praise right here. Okay, Davey, keep this in. I'm going to give you some praise. All right, because that's the stuff that makes UX engineers and design engineers. Right. It's that idea of being like, ooh, can I do this myself? Could I go ahead and give this a shot and actually get something out of this and learn something? Because real talk, I'm looking at that code. And granted, I could go ahead and shit on that code left, right, and center and tell you all this stuff that could be improved. Right. But what's important about that is that that's the same kind of code that I wrote 20 years ago. Right. That after much learning, you get better and better and better with anything, so that eventually over time, if this is something that you wanted to go ahead and do, you will be an excellent UX engineer if you wanted to be that, you know, and that's just the starting point. This is the tip of the iceberg for it.
That's the challenge, is that trying to have an org chart that understands that skill set. And there are different spectrums of design technologists. There are people that are more engineering oriented. So Aisha is an example of a design technologist that skews more towards engineering. My experience is more towards design. So I'm much more within the design spectrum, but I get my hands dirty with code. That makes it even more difficult, because now you have people with different emphasis, and it makes it hard to have a manager that understands the full spectrum and is able to give them career growth advice, support them through their process. It is challenging, I will admit it, but they are extremely valuable. It's just, this is the problem, like why we can't have nice things, is there's this extremely powerful skill set, but corporate org charts can't figure out how to utilize it. So it's like having cold fusion and saying like, I don't know where the on button is, and throwing it into the landfill. And that's the challenge that we're dealing with right here.
In terms of like the role itself, I actually haven't seen, like rarely have I seen design technologists sit within design. Like I see more often that they sit somewhere like in this, they're more engineering focused because they're coding and they have access. They sit in the engineering org. And like in my opinion, I think they should sit in design and be, you know, a more functioning bridge between us both. Like I've spoken a few times about the fact that like my design system team here, like I think all the meta design systems seem separated with the rolling up to design and engineering. They don't roll up to one specific leader, which I think is not optimal in my opinion. I personally had dealt with this at Disney Streaming, where like when we were looking to create a larger design systems team, like I wanted to go over to the edge side. So I wanted to go the opposite direction and be the voice of design in a design systems team that is very much engineering driven. But our design leader would not have that. We tried to do it the other way and bring the design systems team within design. And then Eng was like, oh, no. Hell no. We're not giving engineers to design leaders. Like, we can't do that. So I feel like there's still quite a bit of fuzziness indefinitely for this.
I think it's getting better, though. And I think it, especially with the popularity that, you know, is coming about with design engineering. You know, we've seen like the Vercel post got a lot of traction recently talking about design engineering and a lot of good feedback for that. In fact, actually, speaking of that, so I noticed that RID did an interview with someone. Now, I didn't have enough context. I just saw it on my feed and was like, oh, okay, doing an interview about design engineering. And I have the tweet up now because it triggered me. And it triggered me because I didn't know the other person he was talking to. I was like, I'm not sure who this is when I was looking at the tweet. And the first thing that comes out of this person's mouth after asking, do you think a design engineer role will exist in the long run? This person, first thing he says, he goes, I think this is just a temporary role. I lost my shit. Right? I'm like, we just got somewhere. Now we're just going to remove this role. I lost my shit. I'm like, okay, who the hell is this fucking person? I got to find out, right? I come to find out it is the lead design engineer at Vercel saying this. So I'm like, oh, okay, sorry, hold on a second. What does this take? So I've actually listened to the rest of the interview, and I agree with where he's coming from. And where he's coming from is exactly the kind of thing that I was describing, you know, PJ doing with the code that you were trying to do with the embedding, which is there is, with all the technology that we're having today, it's more and more accessible for designers to begin, you know, creating things that actually work. It's more accessible for engineers to go toward design. I've seen a couple of, you know, a handful of folks do that as well. So there is a emerging of these fields coming together that are producing more design engineers, more design technologists and the like. Whether or not you associate specifically with the role in a similar fashion that PJ saying that he's specifically really gravitating toward design in where I am at GoDaddy, I'm technically sitting in the engineering org, but it doesn't like that role doesn't define you. What defines you is like the things that you want to do and the things that you are doing. And we're doing a better job describing that that's the idea of design engineering. It's that mesh of design and engineering. And that's what that lead design engineer was talking about in that interview, is that there's going to be less and less of the silos of I am strictly a designer or strictly an engineer. And there's going to be more of this gray area. And hopefully these organizations will wise up to it and provide a platform for that to evolve.
I don't agree. I think people like their silos. They like their, this is who I am and this is who you are. And we're different. Look at how society operates.
I don't really want to, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We like our camps. We like our us and thems. There are very few people that like the ambiguity of like, oh, I'm kind of this, I'm kind of that. I'm speaking in broad strokes, but I would argue there's nothing stopping this from happening for the past 20 years. There's nothing stopping intellectual curiosity for a designer or an engineer to deviate from that track. And yet we're still very much in the same space. So I haven't seen a huge surge in growth of design technologists or UX engineers or whatever we want to call it. And I think it's kind of like global design system. I think that goes back to just how people as an aggregate work, how they tick. So I hope I'm wrong. But I haven't seen just that, like even the hockey stick where like, yeah, it's been incremental growth. It just seems to be like, there's a percentage of people that kind of stays the same, that floats in this gray area. And the majority of folks tend to stay in a fairly well-defined space. I guess we'll see.
I think I'm going to have to disagree on that one point. And the one point about that, it's been stagnant, meaning that it was just these people and it's always been these people. And I think that's changing. Now, whether or not it's changing exponentially so that we could actually see it, that's hard to tell. Absolutely. But I think, you know, there are still people that are out there, you know, growing their skill set, whether or not, again, they associate themselves as design engineers, different. But the role itself of design engineer, right, like that hasn't existed unless you call the front end engineer that we used to have a design engineer, right? Because that 20 years ago, that's really what that was. And we've shifted since the Node.js kind of time. So we had to kind of rename it. That's kind of, I think, what happened a little bit. And we've also had a resurgence, or not a resurgence, but a surge of all this backend and full stack that came from the Node.js world and a lot of people doing that. So I think there's a huge amount of engineers that are out there, certainly on that side at least, that are overtaking the narrative or the communications that are out there. And it's less on the design engineering side or the legacy front end role that we used to have. But it's hard to say. I mean, admittedly, I haven't been tracking the metrics to know for sure, absolutely. But just from my side, I mean, I think I see a lot more design engineers speaking publicly now, certainly, than I did before.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong. but I haven't, I mean, cause yeah, I was more, when I was doing this, I wasn't even a front end. I was a front end engineer, but even then much more skewed towards the design and creative experience. And it just, man, it's like, there's just there just doesn't seem to be that upswell. In fact, in some regards, there's, you know, when there were ad agencies and all those crazy flash websites, there's more of a demand. And if anything, I've seen a shrinkage of that specific skill set. But man, like, I hope you're right. I don't want to be right on this. I hope that it does grow.
I think in the large corp, mega corp example, we've been utilizing, like, I see this both at Disney and at Meta, the design technologist or design engineer focused more on like the prototyping aspect of it. So at Disney, I think we called them I think there's a team under design that was design like prototyping. And while they were people that worked on things that might go on experiments, a lot of their work was based on presentation focused things. So I don't know how common like this terminology was, but like the investor day things like that Disney and Netflix does, like Apple, all that stuff, design prototyping team. And I think the knock on that and how designers may see that is a little like that's also spicy, because they would create things that were beautiful. They had a direct line to leadership, but it may not be things that were actually even built off of the system itself. And there was a big struggle for us at Disney to make sure like, oh, just start with what we're doing. And like, if you do make any changes, and like, it's similar to like what PJ and I talk about, like with experiments, like if there's any change, like you do have to let us know, because we have to bake this stuff back in. Like, you can't just go and do whatever you want just for this like investor day sort of thing. So the prototyper role, I feel like, has been more common, like in my experience. Wanted to get your stance, Donnie, on like that specific slant of design technologists.
Yeah. And I'm glad you bring that up, because that's how I started at Compass. When I was hired at Compass, I had a huge amount of imposter syndrome. I was hired as a front-end engineer there, and they immediately put me in a framework that I had no idea what to do with. It was Angular. I was like, I don't know what's going on in here. So at the time, they just hired a director of UX as well, and we were in a lot of the onboarding together. And I said, you know, how would you feel about having an engineer on your team? And it went up the chain, and eventually I became their first UX engineer over there at Compass. And my initial role was prototyping, so that they would have, you know, designs that they would create and sketch. And then I would start, you know, making these prototypes so that they could put it in front of user testing. And over time, because of all the prototypes that I'm making, very rapid iteration kind of stuff, and I'm not doing this in Angular, I'm doing this all in CodePen, I needed like my own set of resources. Well, long story short, those resources turned into the beginnings of the design system there at Compass, because I kept using it over and over. And the you know, once a design got approved, they would want to use whatever the heck I did. So the easiest way to do that is to make them resources that everybody could use, not just me. And that becomes very beneficial entirely. But similarly, at GoDaddy, there are UX engineers. And a lot of their role is to prototype possible directions that we could take for some of the components that we will build or experiences that we might consider. And then we can speak about them, because it's something that we could share and discuss and really get a handle on what is possible from both design and engineering together in one shot. PJ, say something. I disagree. I disagree with him. I disagree.
One thing I just like, it's funny that we've been talking about this, and in some regards, I think we're talking about two different roles. Like, a UX engineer and a design technologist are kind of different beasts, right? Like, even having to understand Angular, I think one reason why we may haven't seen the upsurge is because, dude, like, making interfaces has gotten so much more complicated than what we used to. You want to make a website? Okay, great. Fire up a terminal, install Node. Like, are you kidding me? Like, Are you
It is
kidding
a pain
me?
In the ass now.
Yeah.
It is such a pain. Yeah.
Unbelievably obtuse. And if someone is using, like me, code as a means to an end, like I don't care what it looks like as long as it gets the job done to get an idea out of my head, then we're going to have to work on dramatically reducing the barrier of entry to code, or making it okay to write HTML and CSS again. Like it's okay to do that.
That'd be great.
I think that
yeah,
is
and just
kind
let
of
the people up. Know. Yeah. Yeah. Let's okay. let the people know it is okay, guys, to just write HTML and CSS. You don't need all this shit. All right. Take it from someone who's been doing this for 25 years now. You HTML and CSS by itself. Totally okay.
Yeah.
Totally okay.
That's a big part of it is, man, the barrier of entry has become a cliff. Like the learning curve has become a cliff of just what it takes to make something when really the basics haven't changed and you need a text editor and a browser and that's it.
And that's it. Yeah. I used to write in Notepad, dude. Notepad yeah. EXE. That's where I was. I lived in there. You know, you don't get highlighting. Syntax highlighting? What is that? Right? What error in the console? I got to go open the browser and find out. Actually, I didn't even have a console. What am I talking about? There was no console back then.
No,
you console. Know? I just was like, oh, wait, it didn't work.
You save and then you go refresh and then yeah, you see that it doesn't work and then you go
F5.
And you go back. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's all you had.
And so, in some regards, our march towards efficiency and convenience and developer experience, while all those things are valuable, has created a huge barrier for getting, for increasing that rift between design and engineering. And if we want to bring these two functions together, then we're going to have to make some compromises on convenience to simplify the entry point for everyone. I'd argue we're going to have better product experiences if we get everyone working on the same page, but I do think we're going to have to make it easier for someone that doesn't have the same level of engineering experience to get their hands dirty and feel like they can make something decent in a relatively short amount of time.
I love what you're saying there. And I want to speak on that because I think it's important if folks are interested in being a design technologist, UX engineer, the same roles, there's a lot of information out there that's like very overwhelming, like you're saying, PJ. And I want to let people know, being a design engineer like myself, I think the best way to do it is to remove all the cruft and launch like a code pen and start jamming. That's where you sit. And in fact, I had an ADP list mentee that I was speaking with about this kind of thing. And they're like, oh, so do I have a portfolio or do I, you know, show my GitHub? And I'm like, no, I think that you need to have a code pen profile. And that's what you show off, because that, again, is just HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. The code people can look at the code. The design people can look at the design. It's all right there in one spot. And it really shows off the power of what you're able to do to be able to, like, you know, wield code and make designs very fluidly. So having that code pen and just living in code pen. And on top of the code pen, which is really great, too, is that you're not even dealing with any file system shit. Right? You're not even feeling like, oh, okay, well, how's the file system for this thing? No, you're not doing that either. You're just got an idea in your mind, and the way that you design it is through code. And that's how you get there. So that's what I love about CodePen is no barrier to entry. And it took me a long time to accept like the Node.js MPM world of creating websites, because it is like very obtuse.
Yeah, I think that's where I've feel the barrier. Like it's the gated community that I'm not allowed to come into, where I would love to be able to, like, we have an internal version that's similar to CodePen, but in order to get that access, I would need some engineering endorsement. All I really want to do is just manipulate components, switch themes, understand how people are utilizing our, like, color system or selectors or whatever. But I can't get there. I would need to be able to like set up, go into terminal, set up my own environment, interact with all these different other files that I don't really need to. I just want to manipulate a button.
Yeah. I mean, I go as far as to say, and I know we have a Meta employee on the call, but like, don't use React. For the love of God, don't use React.
Plus one.
Just
plus one.
Just write
plus two. Plus 100.
Ass HTML and CSS.
Plain ass HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Yes. Actually, that's a new framework, right? The plain ass framework. That's what we need to start launching.
The path.
Yeah.
I know HTML and CSS, and it hasn't changed much.
Then there you go. Bingo. Bingo.
Exactly. It's your best friend.
That's what's valuable about it. Like, just use that. Like, all these shiny technology, like React ain't going to be around forever. All these shiny technologies are going to go at some point. HTML, CSS, they ain't going nowhere. They're going to be around for a long time. Sorry, Meta.
It's been around. It's already, it's living, still churning.
Oh, I'm not, it will not be the framework du jour forever. No technology.
Things change. Well, it all changes.
Yeah.
Davy Act. That's the next one. I'm creating my own.
Good luck.
My own framework.
I'm ready to adopt.
DPM.
What do we got to do?
I'm going to change NPM to DPM.
So DPMI, install detached instance, right? There we go.
It's a script that runs in Figma and just detaches every component.
It's going to ask you like, what was the street that you lived on as a child? And then it's going to ask you, what was your first car? And then boom, it works.
Oh, okay. I see what you're doing. It's a good start.
Yeah.
I am going to write a Figma script that just goes through and detaches every component just because I think it's hilarious. For no reason.
Okay, you design engineer you. Okay, I see you.
See, it's just for chaos. It's for chaos.
If you can do it, we could call you a design engineer.
That's right.
Oh, I can do it.
It's a threat. You see that? He's threatening.
Well, this is a fun one. Donnie, where can we find you?
So you could find me anywhere on the internet at Donnie D'Amato. In fact, I just found out that I have my own knowledge paddle on Google. Ooh. So if you search Donnie D'Amato, it actually is like, hey, this person's important somehow. So that's cool.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn. Find me over there. Obviously, DS House. And actually, I'm going to also plug a friend of mine's podcast because it is all about UX engineering. And that's with Adekunle Oduye and Kelly Harp. And their podcast is called Code and Pixels. So if you're interested in this topic and really having a conversation about the same kind of thing that Davey and PJ are doing, just kind of on the UX engineering side, I highly recommend taking a look at that and, you know, checking it out.
Cool. Well, thank you all for joining us for the 40-ish minutes. Have a good one.
Thanks for joining us, Donnie. It was fun.
Yeah, this was great. Thanks.
See you, man.